today's show is proudly sponsored by Minding the Gap. You guys all know that mental health for dancers matters. You're on board. You want to see the culture in your studio change, but where do you start? Enter Minding the Gap. Minding the Gap is dedicated to seeing mental health regarded with the same seriousness as physical health in dance culture, and they come armed with solutions. Whether it's helping you craft policies and procedures that protect the mental wellness of dancers and staff, consulting to build a robust mental health program in your school or company, or providing mental health skills workshops for your students and teachers, Minding the Gap has you covered. They bring the expertise of the best dance mental health experts in the world to you. For more information, visit www.wearemindingthegap.org or click the link in the show notes. Hello, dancers. Today, I spoke with Alyssa Nerlich, aka the Dance Scientist. Alyssa is a performer, inclusive dance artist, dance scientist, and SENR registered sports nutritionist. After training in Germany and South Africa, she went on to complete a Master of Science in Nutrition and Exercise Sciences. Alyssa's goal is to improve dancers' access to evidence-based dance training and nutritional knowledge to support safe training for a healthy career. We spoke about the importance of nutrition education in the dance space, as well as her involvement in some pretty amazing inclusivity programs that I know a lot of you will be interested in checking out. So it was a really fun and informative chat, so I hope that you enjoy it. Before you do, though, please remember that I am not a mental health professional, so anything you hear me say on the show is based on my personal experience and perspectives and should not be considered medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree to not use any of the content to diagnose you or anyone else of any mental or health condition. If any of the things shared on the show resonate with you, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or click the link in the show notes to find the best healthcare professional for you. And before we get started, I also want to mention that anything said on the show reflects my dance experience as a whole and not any one teacher, studio, or company. The opinions shared by my guests in this episode are their own and come from their individual viewpoint. This was such a fun and super informative conversation, so I really hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Hello, hello, dancers. Welcome back. Today, I'm really excited to introduce you all to Alyssa Nerlich. Welcome, Alyssa. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to dive into everything that you have to share. And so, first of all, let's just hear a brief overview of your relationship with ballet. And also, if it's relevant and you feel comfortable, what role your mental health has played throughout your dancing career and how you became to be a dancing scientist.
Yes, so I've always sort of trained in multiple styles, but mainly ballet, contemporary, jazz, and a lot of improvisation as well. So yeah, ballet for me has always been sort of the reliable thing to come back to and really the root of my technique, especially. So I trained in a lot of different places in Germany, in South Africa, and in England. So everywhere sort of ballet was sort of the underlying theme, and then everything else was put on top of it. So yeah, now I'd probably say that contemporary is my main style, but ballet will sort of always be the something that just stays with me. And I'd say that obviously in dance, we always sort of focus on the body. And I found that at least in my training, the body was really the only thing that mattered. So I think it's great to sort of slowly see the shift in the dance culture to also acknowledge that there's more than just the physical aspect of dance. So yeah, I think it would have really helped me while training to acknowledge that there's also emotions at stake, whether that's good emotions, bad emotions, doesn't really matter. But that is still part of training and that's still part of sort of your life and you as a dancer. So yeah, I think that's, from all my training, I've sort of fallen into the dance science world because I think in my training, there were a lot of things that I wish this would have been there that I wish I would have learned about and I didn't. So sort of when I graduated from my dance degree, I thought, you know, I want to do more and I want to actually be able to give the future dancers what I wished I had.
Yeah, with that missing pieces.
Yeah, so that's where I then decided to do a master's in nutrition and exercise science to have that knowledge myself and be able to then continue that and embed it in my dance practice as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's why I started this podcast, because I just felt like, I mean, it was COVID, so everybody was kind of like, mental health was, you know, top of mind for everybody in our world. And, you know, I started it with a good friend, but it was just really like, no one, I mean, I've been retired for like 20 years, but no one ever spoke about it. Like, no one ever spoke about the importance of mind-body connection, or, you know, all of the psychological mechanisms that, you know, can either work for or against you in your career, and also just developing as a human. So yeah, I just wanted to really kind of open up a platform, and yeah, so I can definitely, I hear you.
I think it is really, even doing the master's and knowing that I was going to apply to dance, it's still mm-hmm. all those sort of embedded that no, or you should be performing now, or you should be doing this or that. That's mm-hmm. purely focused on dance. So yeah, I think it is sometimes very hard to sort of go, no, actually I'm going to, maybe seems like the long way, but it's actually the right way. To really just change the culture for the better.
I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's really great. So you've done a lot of continued education, and you have a lot to offer students for sure. So let's start with your approach to teaching. How do you incorporate evidence-based training methods? I think this is like the big one right here, because my husband's a scientist, and so like, I'm always handing him papers and saying, can you interpret this for me? And, you know, like, he helps me to get through things, but like, evidence-based work is like where my heart is. And so I'm just so fascinated by that approach. And I'd love to hear how you incorporate that into your training methods when you're creating classes.
I think for me, it sort of has two sides. So the classes that whose main focus is dance science mm-hmm. or sort of injury prevention, anything like that. And then sort of classes which sort of your general, say if I'd just be teaching a ballet class, for example. So if it's obviously a class that's whose pure focus is the science of it, I do take a very scientific approach and really make sure that it's the current training methods and what's currently actually out there in the research, mm-hmm. which sometimes can be a tricky, as there's not, in some topics, there just isn't that much research actually done with dancers. So that's where sort of you fall back onto the general sports research, and just I apply it to dance with the best of my knowledge and thoughts. But yeah, so I'd say a dance science class will be very focused on the research and the actual current findings. And then all my other classes, it's sort of, it's still there, but I think it's more about, it's what drives me, what informs me. I might not shout about it as loudly to the students, if that makes sense.
You don't want their eyes to start glazing over.
I'll not cite research papers to them, but I might, you know, drop a line here or there about training methods or about injury prevention or anything like that. So yeah, it just depends really on the class and the audience.
Yeah, interesting. So for our teachers out there, you know, do you have any specific topics that you do pull more from when you're designing a curriculum?
I think for me, there's some really great books out there like Dance Anatomy and Safe Dance in Practice, which are really easy tools. So, you know, you don't necessarily need to understand and interpret a scientific paper, but you have that information right there. And especially Dance Anatomy. I mean, I literally have it laying right
behind me. Jackie Haas.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just so easy to show and use. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think for any teachers that, you know, might not necessarily feel comfortable in, you know, the nitty gritty of anatomy or anything like that, it's a really great resource to fall back on. And then for anyone who does feel comfortable reading those scientific papers that might seem a bit daunting, say just read them and use them. And I think there's always, yeah, people to reach out to, whether, you know, if you're not quite sure about what does this actually mean, you know, there's always a way to really find it out and then use it to apply it to your practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that Jackie Haas book I have, I mean, I had like the first, you know, round, first edition that came out, and it's so worn that all the pages are falling out.
That's the best kind of books.
And I think my husband got me a new copy. I think there's a new edition out for Christmas one year because he was like, okay, you need another one of these.
Yeah, mine is still very new. Uh-huh. I also have the Functional Training Anatomy mm-hmm. one of sort of the same series, which I think is also very good to have that sort of supplementary training or strength training and not just sort of the pure dance training. But yeah, they're just great.
Yeah,
books.
There's so many great resources. And then iAdams, of course, with all of their amazing, like, endless resources for different topics and so forth.
But I think that's now, there's just so much out there. You know, even if you just do a quick search on Instagram, you find so many great people. I just say to always, you know, check your sources.
Yes, yes, that is very important.
Don't believe anything out there.
Don't just read the headlines.
and don't just look at how many followers someone has and believe it's all true what they say, because it's not.
Yeah, that's a big one for sure. So as a registered sports nutritionist, how does that specifically inform your teaching? So is that, and again, I understand, like, you've got two different cohorts that you're working with. So talking about pre-professional dancers or dancers in a high level training program, how does that inform that teaching for you?
I think for me, again, it's more sort of the backseat, which informs myself, and sort of mainly I think the language I use. So, you know, in a classroom, I'll definitely not allow any sort of body or weight related sort of stigma or comments, which I think especially in ballet is still very integrated into teaching and into the classroom. So yeah, just obviously where possible, I'll obviously try to actively seek the opportunity to, you know, really educate my dancers about nutrition, but in a general class, it'll just inform my language and I sort of, yeah, how I communicate and how I encourage my dancers to communicate with each other as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think I was, you know, I'm a teacher, and I think it's only been maybe a year and a half ago that I realized that any body comment you make is not a good body comment. Like, you might think you're giving someone a compliment. You know, if you have a student that comes back after summer intensive or something and she's got like more muscles and like looks different and, you know, has different things going on with her body. And you might say, you look so great. You know, have you been working out? Or, you know, those are just sort of knee-jerk comments that might come out. And I've learned that that's actually can be just as detrimental as a negative comment. Yeah.
And I think you also, it's not necessarily only the person. I think we often think about it, the person we say it to. But obviously in a lot of class settings, there's, you know, 10 other dancers in the same room who also hear it. So, you know, if I say something to one dancer that might be positive, 10 other dancers in the room might then start to, you know, compare themselves and weigh themselves against that comment. And yeah, I think it just, you know.
Yeah, it's like
there's no need for it. Yeah, it doesn't improve my teaching. It doesn't improve, you know, the students' learning. So let's just leave that at the front door.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that needs to be left at the studio door, right? Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so I understand that you also do some private one-on-one coaching. So yeah, I'd love to hear about what that looks like. Obviously, it's going to differ from one dancer to the other, but what do those services look like, and how are you pulling your scientific background also into those sessions?
Yeah, I'm still sort of developing the different kinds, I'd say, but for me in general, I approach coaching, yeah, as you said, very individually, very collaboratively, but it's always for me rooted in knowledge and learning. Mm-hmm. So obviously everyone's needs and sort of goals are different and individual. So yeah, in a coaching session, I'd firstly just start with a general chat about, you know, what are your goals and what is it that you might struggle with? What do you want to get out of coaching? And then from there, plan it together. So it's not just me going, you know, here you go, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, then just collaboratively create a learning plan. And I think that for me is sort of the key word. It's a learning plan, not a coaching plan. So I don't see any value in simply, you know, telling a dancer how to fuel themselves or providing them with the steps of, you know, this is how, you know, it's great for you to eat this or that. It's just not sustainable and not beneficial to anybody, especially in the long run. So yeah, I think just nutrition, the knowledge of nutrition and education is so important, but unfortunately it's just lacking in dance education and training at the moment. And I want dancers to walk away from coaching with the knowledge that they can utilize and then apply to their training and their lives. So yeah, one-on-one coaching session with me is really about learning the foundation of nutrition and fueling so that the dancer can carry that with them and apply it to whatever stage of their life they might be in. Because I think that's what sort of is so important about to create that general change that's needed in the dance world. You know, I could obviously give a dancer a fueling plan and that means they're healthy and they can perform at their best. But if I give that dancer the knowledge themselves, then they carry that with them through their career and it'll just have a bigger effect. So, you know, they might share that with their colleagues or later become a teacher and pass it on to their students. And that just creates that general change. At least that's what I believe and hope.
I love that approach because, yeah, like you said, I mean, you could give somebody a sheet with like a checklist of like, make sure you get this, this, and this. But if they don't understand why and how that is going to positively affect not only their dancing, but just like their day-to-day living, then it can be really difficult to apply it, number one. And number two, potentially I can imagine if someone doesn't understand the reasoning behind those plans, it could potentially encourage some not great eating habits, I would assume.
Yeah, and I think it just, so I definitely, like myself, you know, I was looking at sort of meal plans or, you know, inspiration that you can just download. But then, and I thought, oh, you know, this is great. This is something that, you know, is out there. It's surely something you should do. And I thought I actually had quite a bit of nutrition knowledge, you know, what's healthy, what's maybe not healthy. But then when it actually came to studying nutrition, I realized like I know nothing. And I was just sat in those lectures at the start thinking, oh,
I interesting. Was wrong.
That's, you know, yeah, that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
So I think that knowledge is just so much more valuable than sort of, yeah, just a weekly meal plan or anything like that. You know, that can certainly be a tool and that can be developed, but it should be developed by the person who actually needs to eat what's on said plan and not just by a random person.
Right, the person who's going to the grocery store and like selecting the food.
and cooks it and has to eat it. Because I think that's what I struggled a lot with. You know, I'd look at these recipes and think, oh, half of these things I don't like. So then I'd just, you know, go back to eating just whatever where, you know, that's not really the point.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. No, I love that approach. So let's talk about a little bit about your inclusive dance background. I know you've got a couple of different things in your arsenal to serve those populations. So I'd really love to hear about that.
Yeah. So for me, sort of inclusive dance has, thinking about it now, always sort of been part of my journey as already sort of early on in training. The school that I trained at, we had a inclusive improvisation lab, which was from my dance school and a local school. But it was very on a very just sort of nonchalant level. You know, it was just a class and it wasn't just us. There were also other students in the room and we just had the class together. Mm-hmm. That was really all that was to it, which I think for the age was very appropriate and great. But that then sort of obviously had an impact on me later. So when I sort of decided of, you know, what is my practice going to be? What is my teaching going to look like? It was just, for me, it was obvious that, you know, it had to be inclusive and accessible for everyone. So yeah, when I, in 2019, I started the Mixed Able Dance Education Program by Dean A13 Dance Company. So it's called MADE for short. So MADE is the first program of its kind in Germany. So it's aimed at disabled and non-disabled dance students and dance artists. So we meet 3 times a year for an intensive, which is led by different artists from across Europe. And it just gives, you know, each artist works differently, which then gives us a lot of insight. Mm-hmm. So it really gives a lot of sort of food for thought in all areas of dance. So whether that be performance, choreographic processes or facilitation, it really covers everything. I've also performed in a project called Co-Create by Dance Syndrome, which is an inclusive dance company based in Preston in England, where I'm based. And that project gave a disabled and non-disabled dance artist the opportunity to create a choreographic piece together, which was then later performed. And then more recently, last year, I started working with Stopgap Dance Company. So Stopgap is also based in England and use dance as a movement for change. So I've completed Seedbed last year, which is their teacher training course for inclusive dance teachers. And then I'm also an IRIS teacher. So IRIS is Stopgap's inclusive dance syllabus, which again is the first of its kind. And sort of IRIS, so what it stands for, it's the 4 levels of the syllabus. So it's include, respond, integrate and specialize. So this takes young dancers through dance training, but what I love about it is that you can apply it to anyone. So the principles can really support any dancer's development and training, and not necessarily young disabled dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's sort of the 3 main projects or companies.
That's huge. That's a lot. Yeah, that's really great. You know, I love speaking to people who live in other countries because it's really cool to hear what's going on and, you know, different research. And, you know, there's a lot of research coming out of Australia and UK and not so much here yet, but we're working on it for sure. But yeah, this is really, really cool stuff. So I'm curious to know, do you have any sort of generalized, I don't want to say like advice or I don't know, anything that could help our teachers that are listening right now who might want to start looking for an inclusive dance continuing education course, you know, any tips or ideas for that?
Yeah, I definitely recommend looking at Stopgap. So they have a lot of general resources that you can just have a look at and sort of, you know, use in your own practice. But also Seedbed now with COVID, it's online.
Yeah,
so, you know, it doesn't really matter where you are. And that just really gives you the foundation of inclusive teaching. Mm-hmm. Again, I feel like there's now a few resources out there, but, you know, not what it could be and should be. Mm-hmm. So other than that, I would say the inclusive dance community is still quite small. So just reach out to someone, you know, I think me definitely, but other dance artists as well, you know, they'd surely be happy to have a chat and point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Even just making some small changes to perhaps your language or how you advertise your classes and things like that can really make a big difference, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's where sort of for me overall in my practice, whether that's teaching or not teaching, mm-hmm. I've really adopted sort of the approach of mainly of Stopgap, but that inclusive practice benefits everyone. You know, it's not just thinking, you know, or if a disabled dancer were to join my class. No, it's any dancer in the room, any person in the room. It benefits everyone. So for me, like, my work will, at least at the moment, I don't plan to aim it at disabled or non-disabled dancers. It's just aimed at dancers. Yes. But obviously I still need to have the tool to be able to support anyone that walks through that door. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that doesn't mean that I just teach, you know, no matter who's in the room. It means that I have the tools to support both disabled and non-disabled dancers in my work and in my teaching.
Yes, I love this approach because, and I've said this before about different, in different situations, but it really seems like, you know, if we're talking about ballet specifically, you know, it has a long history of being super exclusive, not inclusive,
yeah.
Whether we're talking about abilities, whether we're talking about backgrounds, race, you know, all sorts of body types, like all sorts of different things. Ballet has just, you know, tried to enclose itself in this sort of exclusive club. And we're Definitely. Trying to break that down now, you know, not just me, but like you and so many people around the world, you know, see the problem here. And that if you are approaching classes, whether you're teaching or advertising for your school, your intensive, whatever it is, if you are coming from that perspective of that, this is just for dancers. It's not for one group or another group. It's for anyone who feels the need to move and to express themselves, then we are going to gain like so much art, you know, as a yeah. community. I mean, can you imagine how many artists we've missed out on? How many choreographers we've missed out on, how many important pieces we have missed out on throughout history because of this exclusive club that is the ballet, you know? So programs like this really like light my fire and just make me so excited to see the future of dance and see what's to come.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, the dance world, as you said, has missed out on a lot. And I think it's just important sort of moving forward to communicate that clearly and to really show that, you know, to be open to learning on how we can make this change. Because I think in some areas just sort of go, you know, oh, we never actively excluded anyone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, your messaging or your practice might also not actively make it possible for everyone to be included. So I think it is a lot of sort of self-reflection as well, and taking a close look in the mirror to think, you know, does what I teach or what I live my life by really mean that everyone can be included?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oof. That's a good one.
That uncomfortable uh-huh. look in the mirror.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, you know, definitely as I've gotten older as a teacher, I've uncovered a lot of stuff that if I think back, because I started teaching when I was super young, I was like 18 years old. You know, I graduated high school, got my first job, dancing, and started teaching, you know, and the things that I would say, you know.
I think that's a thing where, you know, if you don't really know better, right. That's how you've been taught for all these mm-hmm. years. It's, yeah, you just sort of go into default yeah. mode and go, you know, this is what we're doing.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's great when, you know, you can honestly say, oh, you know, that really wasn't the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
do better.
Let's change that.
Yeah, let's do better.
Yeah, let's do better.
For sure. Oh, this is really, really cool stuff. So I'm wondering if you have, we're kind of like going off on a tangent, but that's me. Like, that's just how I do things. But I'm thinking about the age groups that you might serve through your coaching and your teaching. Is there any one particular age group that you specialize in, or is it sort of, you know, whoever comes to you?
For me, I would probably not necessarily put it down as age, mm-hmm. although it's probably more sort of the older age groups. But for me, it's more sort of dancers that know that they want to, or they have the aim to do a dance career mm-hmm. as their career. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily even just performing, but, you know, teaching right. or choreographing. Like me, I never really wanted to perform myself.
Really?
I started out wanting to choreograph. Uh-huh. And I never really wanted to teach. And then I taught for the first time and I was like,
oh,
hang on. this is actually quite cool. Yes. So yeah, not necessarily just, that's, you know, funny, a performer, mm-hmm, but also, yeah, anyone who wants to have dance in their life as a professional career, whether that's full-time, part-time, or just a few hours.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I like that too, because one of the friends of the show, Georgia Kenning from Balanced Ballerinas, mm-hmm, she always says, you know, she has a large adult ballet program at her school. And she's always saying, you know, a lot of people will, you know, pick up golf as a hobby or tennis or something like that as an adult. And someone might, yeah, ask you, oh, what do you do? Like, you know, in your free time. And they will say, I am a golfer, or I play tennis.
Yeah.
Very confidently with no problem saying it. But you ask an adult dancer, you know, oh, what do you do in your free time? They might be a little bit hesitant to say, I take ballet classes.
Yeah, I think it is, even with dancers, mm-hmm, that might do it professionally. It's also that stigma. I feel like a lot of the time, if, you know, if you're dancing in a professional ballet company and that's your full-time job, mm-hmm, sort of society sees that as, okay, they are a ballet dancer. But, you know, if you're sort of a freelance dancer, mm, maybe having different projects, it's sort of, you
it's
know,
hard to explain.
You do some dancing. Yeah. But, you know, what do you actually,
yes,
do?
Oh, I got that so many times when I was dancing. Well, what do you really do?
Yeah.
I'm like, do you want to come follow me at 9 a.m. to class? Like,
yeah. I think even just, you know, not only exclusively, you know, doing dance work, mm-hmm, people then straight away go, oh, you know, the dance work might, you know, isn't going that well. It's like, no, I might have different interests, yeah, you know. Yeah, I think that's very...
Yeah.
Another issue, but... A very important,
yeah,
one.
No, it is. It is important. And it's important to know too that, you know, you had spoken earlier about kind of maybe having an internal struggle about not just pursuing your dance career and like kind of having, yeah, these varied interests that have now culminated into a beautiful career for yourself. But, you know, that's something I talk in the show a lot too about is like, what kind of artist are you if all you do is go to class and then rehearsal and then go home and do Pilates while you're watching Dancing with the Stars and then go to bed, you know, like,
yeah,
what kind of whole person could you be really, you know, with only that in your life, you know? So I think it is really important for other dancers to see people like yourself who are pushing those boundaries a little bit and going, no, wait a second. Like, I can still have a dance career and I can do this thing and that thing and all of these things inform one another and just kind of help you to be a whole person.
Yeah, I think that's the informing part. Like, it's really important that it's not, you know, two completely different things. No, they go hand in hand together, but because we have that sort of historic view of put on your pointe shoes, you perform, you go, mm-hmm, home. It's sort of, that's not all that's, you know, that's there, that's to offer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I really wish that dance would take a good look at sort of, you know, in professional sport, we have all these different roles. They're all always there. They're always so invested in sort of the athlete's process. I don't know why in dance we think that our bodies have, I don't know, magic healing, yeah, powers and we don't need physios,
yes,
and we don't, you know, we only need dance. Like, no, we also need a lot of different,
yeah,
things.
Yeah, well, and there's also that stigma of, like, if you get injured, you don't want anybody to know because then you don't want to, like, be labeled the injured person in the room or, you know,
yeah,
that whole thing, too. Yeah, it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, our bodies are in some different species. It'd be great, but we still need to look after them.
Body and mind, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, we're not robots.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I need a t-shirt that says dancers are not robots.
Yeah.
Be a good one.
I'd get that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Oh, well, this has been really cool. It's been fascinating, again, diving into your approaches to teaching and all that good stuff. So I'm going to now shift and give you my two fun questions. And all of my guests get these. And so it's really fun to kind of like see all the different answers that I've been getting. So first of all, I'm going to put you in my time machine and I'm going to send you back, let's say, I'd say, like, let's say 15-year-old Alyssa, because I feel like that's sort of, you know, it's a very formative time, like your identity development, all that good stuff. And then like dance gets like intense, yeah, right, around that age. So I'll take you back to age 15, and I'd love to know what you would tell yourself as a young dancer.
This might be a bit controversial coming from me now teaching, but to not just take mm-hmm. everything your teacher says and take their word for it, especially not if you've sort of got, not just from one teacher, just always know that there's still more out there, and to actively seek other voices and other more information is probably what I would tell myself. Because I think, yeah, just sort of listening to the people you have around you and just focusing on that does limit you to only their experience and their knowledge. But yeah, open your eyes.
I love that. No, I don't think it's controversial at all, because that, to me, that just means you're a great teacher, because the best teachers teach their students to question everything, right? I mean, that's the scientific curiosity that underpins science. You have to be curious. Yeah, you have to be curious,
yeah,
but also
everything.
You have to go into it with the understanding that the information will likely change, and you have to be able to adapt to that, and also that you're going to be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the most empowering things that a teacher could share with their student, is if they ask a question, you can answer the question and say, but also I could be wrong. And here's why. And, you know, here are some places we can discover more information, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I love that. That's really cool.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay, so last one. Now I'm going to give you my magic wand. And you get to wave it, but you get to change just one thing about the dance world. What would it be?
I think I touched on it a bit more, but to open its doors to other professionals. Like, there isn't just the, you know, ballet teacher. There's more. Again, there's more. But yeah, just to sort of open the doors to other people, and not just the history of ballet teaching and ballet dancing. That's a great history, but
some of it needs
some of
to
it
be
we just
in a book.
Leave that as history.
To be read. Not to be passed
and
on.
And stay in the book.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And not to be applied, for sure.
Yeah, and not to be applied.
I totally agree. I mean, like, I don't think we should forget about it, for sure, because, you know, it's important to study the past and learn from our mistakes. But I think there are a lot of, quote, mistakes that aren't recognized as such, you know?
I think what frustrates me is that in the sort of limited research that's out there, it is recognized as a mistake, but we all go, let's carry on. So I think that's we know that certain practices are not good, but we just carry on. And yeah, that's just not the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cool. I'm right there with you. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been really, really fun. Before I let you go, though, I would love to give you the opportunity to let the listeners know where they can connect with you, website, socials, all the good things.
Yes. So my website is alyssa-nerlich.com. So complicated surname. So it's probably easier to just find me on Instagram, which is Alyssa Dance Science, just all together. But yeah, on my website and on my Instagram, you can find lots of information about me, my work, general dance science stuff. And I'll also be launching some new one-to-one nutrition coaching soon. So that will also all be on my website and on my Instagram as well.
Awesome. And guys, I'll put the links to both of those in the show notes, so you can easily click on them, as always.
Perfect.
And shoot you directly over to Alyssa and all of her amazing work. So yay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay,
see you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was such a great conversation with Alyssa. I love her approach to, especially the nutrition coaching, about teaching dancers the tools that they need in order to fuel themselves the right way for them. I always hate it when I see like eat this, not that posts on Instagram or what I ate in a day. Like, it's just so frustrating and I'm sure mind-boggling if you are a dancer and are trying to fuel yourself in the right way. And it's like you get all of this information that isn't tailored to you, and half of it probably doesn't even apply to you. So definitely working with a professional to get something tailored to your needs is important. But even more important is just learning the basic science behind nutrition and being able to then apply it to your specific needs. I think that was really, really cool. Also, I am just in love with all of these inclusivity programs that she's involved with. If you go to Alyssa's website, she has links to all of the programs that she's been involved with. If you're interested in reaching out and getting some education yourself. So I thought that was really, really cool, and I'm just so grateful for her time. And it was just a really fun chat. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, follow the pod on Spotify, and share it with just 3 friends to get the word out. If you have any questions, particular topics you'd like me to cover, or guests you'd like to hear from, you can email those to me at dancebetterpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram. You can hit up my DMs there as well at dancebetterpodcast. Thanks so much for listening today, you guys. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to learn with you on the next episode. Bye.